At 10 minutes past midnight, Greg Nielsen stormed into the makeshift wooden building and slammed the door so hard it nearly tore off the hinges. His face was flushed with anger, and his heart was pounding like a drum. Outside, under a full moon and star-laden sky, a strong wind whipped through the oppressive desert air and swirled the sand into small mounds. Even crickets didn't venture out into the forbidding atmosphere. Meanwhile, the window air conditioner chugged and whirred loudly, as it did 24 hours a day, fighting a losing battle with the sweltering heat in the middle of August. Tacked above the entrance to the building was a small sign that said, U.S. Agricultural Mission. It fooled no one. The lone sentry on guard confirmed what everyone knew. This building, on the outer edge of the huge American military and commercial complex in Dairan, in the heart of the most productive oil field in the world, was the Saudi Arabian outpost of the Company, as the CIA was euphemistically called. "Brad and I had a real shouting match," Nielsen exclaimed to Bill Fox, his assistant. "We almost came to blows." Fox was seated at one of the two battered gray metal desks in the large, drab room. He looked up anxiously from a thick pile of computer runs and asked, "Does he know that you've been talking to Colonel Aziz?"
"I told him the time for pussyfooting is over."
Fox sucked in his breath and blew it out in a whoosh.
"Don't worry," Nielsen added. "He doesn't think you're in this with me. In fact, he wants the company to can me as station chief of this hellhole and for you to get my job. So you'll come out of it smelling like a rose. How do you like that?"
Fox looked guilty but relieved. Ignoring him, Nielsen turned his thoughts back to his meeting in General Chambers' office. He had refused to be intimidated. He'd learned long ago that military men like Chambers preferred to tell Washington precisely what the president and his advisors wanted to hear.
"Must have been a hell of a discussion," said Fox,
staring at Nielsen through heavy black-framed glasses. Only 33, Fox was 5 years younger than Nielsen, but he looked 10 years older. His thinning and prematurely graying hair and an expanding forehead gave him a mousy look.
"Oh, it was. When he gave me the usual shit that the Saudi royal family is America's great friend and ally, I laughed in his face. I told him that they were one of the most corrupt, repressive, and autocratic regimes in the world, and that they only supported us if it was in their own self-interest.
They also happen to be our largest supplier of foreign oil. It won't be a great day if people back home turn on a light switch and nothing happens."
Nielsen smiled. The lack of creative thinking by people like Fox had doomed the company to its current state of rigor mortis.
"Jesus, Bill," he said. "That's the whole point. How to maintain a secure source of Saudi oil for the people back home.
And you think that dumping the Saudi king is the answer?"
"Wake up and open your eyes. The radical fundamentalists are getting stronger here, as they did in Iran under the Shah. It's only a question of time until they topple the royal family and seize control. Then they'll be in a position to cut off our oil spigot."
"I'm not sure you're right. And I hate like hell betting all our marbles on Colonel Aziz."
With his distinctive, off-kilter walk, pronounced now, as it always was when he was tired, Nielsen crossed the room to the small refrigerator. He desperately wanted a cold beer. But he had to settle for a Diet Coke because of the Saudi royal family's prohibition of alcoholic beverages. He pulled out 2 cans, tossed one to Fox across the room, snapped open the top of the other, and sipped greedily. Then he leaned back in his desk chair and put up his feet, encased in rugged, high-cut boots covered with dust. He was still feeling the surge of adrenaline from his argument with General Bradley Chambers, and his deep blue eyes were alert, shining with intensity. He ran his hands through his closely cropped, cinnamon-brown hair, coated with a layer of wind-blown sand, thinking about his next move. To preempt Chambers,
He'd go to Washington tomorrow. He'd get support from Hugh O'Brien, the director of the CIA. He'd persuade O'Brien to escalate the issue to the Oval Office.